If you want to explore unique perspectives that are rarely expressed in mainstream media, you are listening to the right channel. This is CJSF 90.1 FM, broadcasting from Burnaby, BC.
Welcome to Can Queer, home of Canada's queer media. My name is Luke Smith.
And I'm Sebastian.
And this week we have quite the show lined up for you. We have not one, but two different interviews. I was reached out to by the great folks over at Katie, C-A-T-I-E. They are one of Canada's leading providers, knowledge broker, I think is how they frame themselves, on the issue of HIV/AIDS and other sexually bloodborne and diseases. Mm-hmm. And they reached out to us about the impending ending of some critical funding. Now, we've actually talked about this before, Sebastian, because I think it is a fantastic initiative. Mm-hmm. And that is the federal government announced funding. It was a big package of funding. In the first year, it was about $18 million. A whole thwackload of that went towards testing facilities, i.e. facilities that do the testing of blood. And the other half of it went to community organizations to distribute those at-home self-testing HIV kits.
Yes.
But first, Sebastian,
Yes.
Big news out of Whitlock, Alberta.
Okay.
Now, if you recall, we mentioned that there were some folks there who were, and I don't want to be too flippant about it, because there were certainly a couple of people who were outraged at the audacity of those gays putting their flag on the sidewalk or on a flagpole. But there are certainly a lot of people who are like, look, you know, we want to carve out public spaces from these kinds of declarations of support. You know, we had a similar issue before, and I think it was Norwich, Ontario, banned all non-civic flags. And then they reversed their ban by just adding a new flagpole.
Right, yes.
Which they now put the pride flag on. So Whitlock, there's a mechanism in Alberta where if you get a certain number of signatures, I think it's about 250 for a municipality, you can pose a question that the local council has to then vote or have voted on. And they posed a very similar question. What they asked folks in Whitlock is essentially, should they get rid of their existing rainbow crosswalk and also remove rainbow flags from being flown in the town of Whitlock? It's not a very big town.
Is it like banning the rainbow flag altogether or just off of municipal property?
It's Westlock. I keep saying Whitlock, but it is Westlock.
Right.
Just unsure. It's the town of Westlock.
Westlock. Okay.
Now, it's worth mentioning that they have just shy of 5,000 people in the town of Westlock.
Right.
And about one in five of them came out and voted in this particular plebiscite. And it was close. It was a 0.9% margin.
Right.
And if you want to, you're like, wow, that seems close. But what does that translate to? That translates to 25 people.
Okay.
25 voters made all the difference in Westlock, Alberta, with about 663 people voted in favor of removing the rainbow crosswalk and banning the use of pride flags on municipal flagpoles,
right,
compared to the 639 voting against. Now, I know for the queer community in Westlock, this was seen as a bit of a really an opening attack on public displays of queerness in the town. And they really tried to motivate as many people as they can to get out and oppose. But evidently, a significant number of people felt otherwise.
What's the reaction to this in the community so far? Has there been talks of holding another election? Are they going to bring it up to the provincial level? Or is it too soon?
Well, the town council actually has a couple of options on the table. Now, they've got up to 45 days to verify all of those petition signatures. And on a vote that is, you know, the difference is 25 people, you know, the verification of signatures is going to be pretty important stuff. Then they are required to pass a first reading of the decision of this within about 30 days. Now, it's worth noting that potentially there's two things that could happen here. The council could uphold, agree with this plebiscite, and actually pass the bylaw that it happens, or they could not. The other option is to call a full vote of the town, essentially make it like an election issue. And do the same question all over again, but with the resources of the municipality put into the actual plebiscite. So, you know, it's interesting. At this point, no one really knows exactly what's going to happen.
Right.
But to be honest with our listeners, realistically, it's probably going to pass. These councillors are unlikely to overrule even the slimmest majority of their constituents.
I would like to see a little bit more talk from the people of Westlock about this, because I have seen quite a bit of, especially queer media sources sort of automatically framing the entire community as being homophobic. And I don't necessarily think that's fair. I mean, for all we know, they could just all be libertarian and they could be 100% all for the gays, but they just don't think municipal dollars should go towards that. And if you want to raise your own money to dig your own flagpole and raise your own flag, then and pay for your own street painting, then, you know, have at her. I don't want to jump to the notion that an entire community is homophobic. There's many reasons why someone could vote against this, and I would rather hear input than jump to conclusions about an entire city, you know?
Well, it's interesting you say that, because some of the arguments being put forward for this particular vote is some of the folks who voted in favor of banning and removing the rainbow crosswalks.
Right.
Their hot take on this is, you know, the government as an institution of the people should be neutral. It should have no opinion in either way on any group.
Well, you could say if you don't want it paying for cultural things, and you could also say it should not be funding like the Santa Claus parade or an Easter egg hunt or family
St. Patrick's parade. Or,
like they should be either funding none of them or making grants that you have to apply to available but are not guaranteed. Like there's got to be a way of doing this. Like, this is something we've said before, but the flagpole issue, either let everyone on or you let no one on. Anything halfway is unfair. And a lot of people prefer letting everyone on. Some people prefer letting nobody on. There's the issue of, if you are going to allow these things, who's going to pay for it? It is municipal dollars going towards this. It could just be a matter of, like, we are in a shortfall and we can't afford to upkeep this stuff. We would like to, but we just can't right now. Like that is also a perfectly fair, though unfortunate, reason. At which point, you know, the local, if the vote is whether or not the municipality will pay for it versus whether or not it's banned, because those are two different issues. Saying the municipality will not pay for it, but if you want to pay for it, then that's your business. That's a very different thing from we are not permitting it. We are not permitting it is a little bit, let's say, Eastern European under current political, you know, the situation there versus, you know, you can do it if you want, but we're not going to set aside a budget line for it. I think that's a very different statement. And the reasons for that could be multitudinous, but just saying like, no, it's banned in all contexts, I think that's That's a bit much. If it was just it's banned in all contexts, then I'd be like, yeah, 5,000 homophobes living in one place. But I don't think that's what they're doing. I don't think that's what the vote actually is.
Well, it now means that the town of Westlock can only raise on their official town flagpoles federal, provincial, and municipal government flags. And okay. All crosswalks are black and white.
Okay.
That's what the outcome is. One of the reasons that I have seen, and I'm sure Sebastian, you can add to this, is a small proportion of our community, about 1 in 10 people, maybe slightly less in rural Alberta, people. So, you know, we're only talking about 300 or 400 people in this town. That's if every single homosexual got up and voted, they would still be outvoted on this one.
Oh, yeah.
You know what I mean? And it's just not a huge number of people. And historically, you have been denied jobs because we've been denied jobs because we're gay. We have been arrested, incriminated. And these crosswalks were a way of local communities saying, look, we know you're in our community and we support you. And we believe that this message is important and you have a welcoming place to be here.
Yeah. If they were to say that there's no money for crosswalks or flags because we're putting all that funding into a local community center with medical doctors on staff to help with trans health issues and counseling and job assistance. And like, if you were to say, no, we're not going to do that. We're going to do this other thing, because to a small degree, and this might be controversial, to a small degree, there's a lot of communities that paint a rainbow crosswalk and call it a day.
Mm-hmm. It's just performative. Literally.
It's performative. It's virtue signaling. It's a weirdly expensive virtue signal, because the grade of paint you need to paint the road is very specific and it's not cheap. And if you were to say, like, look, no, we're not going to do this thing. We're going to do this other thing that actually affects lives. I'd be like, yeah, you know what? Burn every crosswalk in the country. I don't care. Build the community center. However, there are some places that don't have the funding for that. There's some places that don't have the population for that. They're the small town that my dad grew up in, population 800 people, doesn't have enough people to support a doctor, one family doctor. You have to drive 45 minutes out of town to the next closest community, which is large enough for two doctors. So, I mean, like, I understand that you need a certain population density to justify certain kinds of services. And, you know, Westlock, 5,000 people may not have that density, but still, you know, the general principle of flagpoles and crosswalks really play second fiddle to real resources. And only certain communities actually do put money into real resources, which is a bit unfortunate. And it's, you know, people getting upset because, you know, they're not putting the right symbols out there. I don't know. That doesn't really move me as much as, you know, if they are saying we're no longer going to fund the local community center because of, I don't know, we hate the gays. Like, that would upset me. It's a very different story. But if it is just an issue, like, it's all about context, you know? Basically, if they're just saying there's no funding for it, I'd be like, you know what? There's no funding for it. You know, the country's going through a bit of a slump right now. It's fine. You know, if you're going to say we will revisit this issue in 5 years, it's fine. It's just a matter of how you go about doing it. There's a real optics issue, not only in doing it, but also in not doing it, how you're not doing it, or if you're doing it, why you are doing it. Is it just optics? Is it just virtue signaling? Or is it actually something material behind that? I don't know.
We talked about how these rainbow crosswalks might be virtue signaling that, hey, this is a great place. We believe in the gays. We know that you are here. But likewise, what concerns me is that by actively choosing from that community to remove these signals, these symbols, by saying, we don't want any of that in this town. That sends its own very clear message to not only homosexuals in Alberta, who are now probably taking Westlock off their list of places to visit. But also, I imagine that there are some folks in Alberta who are going, oh, wow, fine. You know, they've finally seen some sense. That's a town I can go and take my, you know, go and live in. I worry about the town becoming more unforgiving,
yeah,
as it is seen as a virtue signal to those who disagree with public expressions of homosexuality.
That is one of the details about the story that kind of sat with me a little bit odd. They're not saying they're not going to upkeep it anymore. They're saying they're going to remove it. Because if you're saying we're not going to upkeep it, after it fades, we're just going to paint it white. That is a, we have decided to funnel our funds elsewhere.
Yeah.
As opposed to we are going to remove it, which is, that has a different message.
Yeah. Well, we will be keeping an eye on that story and others from across Canada over the coming days. We are going to be playing now with Overcome by Chilco in the Rosemary. I believe this is a great band, three-piece band out of Victoria, BC. They have a beautiful logo.
I think I'm happy, at least for the time being. I am in the sun, but not yet burning. I puddle around you, if I bring the most to you. With hopes that I caught it in summer glows to you. Control the burn. Looking forward to the morning when we're both sober. Nothing's better than talking on the coffee with her. I know how deep it is to feel done to what I can't overcome. The sunrise ain't no loaded gun until you know. How short some good things last, but it's not all bad. In fact, it's twice as good, babe. Knowing that someday I can be saved. I know how deep it is to feel done. What do I can't overcome? The sunrise ain't no loading gun. So you're scared.
Hello and welcome back to Kangri, home of Canada's queer media. My name is Luke Smith. As we mentioned at the top of the hour, we are deep diving into what hopefully we can inspire the government to check the back of the couch, you know, look in the glove box of all of their various black sedans and see if they cannot find a little bit more cash to make this program move forward. Now, I am very excited to be joined by Jody Jolimo, who is the executive director of CADI, which is Canada's source for HIV and Hep C info. Thank you so much for joining me today.
Thanks, Luke.
Now, cliff notes for the audience listening. Now, there was an initiative, and I don't have the numbers super handy with me right now, but essentially the government offered big old envelope of cash specifically to roll out HIV testing. Actually, whilst I said that, I've pulled up the numbers just for the audience. The Public Health Agency of Canada provided CanQueer with some information on it. In November 2020, they authorized for the first time ever the use of at-home self-tests for HIV in Canada. In 2022, in August, the minister announced more than 17 million to support HIV testing, including 8 million of which for 2022-2023 to support and distribute HIV self-tests, and approximately 8.7 million for the National Microbiology Lab to build a process said tests. And then if I recall correctly, they extended it in 23 to 24, so the year that we are currently in, to the tune of another 8.6 million, give or take, to continue this efforts. Now, what we've been told from folks over at Katy is that you were sending out, and correct me if I'm wrong here, around 200 of these kits every couple of weeks. So that clearly is demand.
Yeah, there is demand. And I mean, 200 every couple of weeks is only my organization. We're one of many across the country. I believe hundreds are actually distributing the self-test kits. And we know that in the last year, over 200,000 of these test kits have been ordered. So there is demand, 100%. And I should say, Luke, it's not that the test kits aren't continuing. They will be available, and they were before the government invested in this project. What's not continuing is the infrastructure that we built over the last 18 months to essentially promote the test kits, to deliver them, to distribute them in ways that are, you know, population specific, where you can see uptake. And you can imagine a project like that takes a bit of time too, right? So there's a runway. And then, so for our sector, we knew that this was a limited investment, but we thought if we could prove to the government that it worked, that they would continue the funding. And, you know, by their own admission, the project has worked. They acknowledge that we have reached people that hadn't tested before. Almost half of the people who take these test kits home have never tested for HIV before, right? So these are really great numbers from a project's perspective. So, of course, we got our hopes up as a sector that the funding would be continued. And I should add, I'm old enough, I can give you a little history lesson, if you don't mind, which is that, you know, this investment of 17 million, of which only 8 million went to community, the rest went to laboratories and things like that, right? 8 million went to community. This was the first new funding we'd seen in over a decade, despite the fact that the federal government signed on to international commitments in 2016. And that wasn't the previous government. That was our current government. They signed on in 2016. But after that, there were no new funds. They signed on to commitments, but really didn't put any resources behind it. So we were excited when we saw an injection of cash to go out and distribute this new testing technology that we had. But, you know, to not continue that funding, which we know was being used by organizations to link people to care, which is one of the places that we're falling down, again, by the government's admission, we're not linking people to care as much as we need to. We were using that money as a sector to do that. We were hiring outreach workers and peer navigators and people that could not only do the testing and support the testing, but then link people to care. And that's the investment we need. So I hope you're right. I hope they turn over the right couch cushion and they realize that if we're going to get to 2030, if we're going to actually make the commitments live up to the commitments that they made, it will require an investment. And this isn't a perpetual investment. This is a short-term investment to really get the tools that we have. We've got all the tools we need in this country into the hands of the right people. That's what's not happening right now. And we need cash to do that.
Now, the government of Canada, you mentioned it's this government. It's hard to believe they've been here since 2015. But this government, the Trudeau Liberals, have signed on, as have many other governments, to the UNAIDS 2025 targets. That's 95% of people living with HIV, knowing their status, and then 95% of those receiving treatment, and then 95% of those undetectable, being untransmittable. So the 95, 95, 95. I don't believe we're at 95% of people knowing that they have HIV yet. And that's the piece of this puzzle that that I'm getting the sense here that this investment by the government of Canada was really kind of targeted towards. So, you know, you've done this program, you mentioned, for about 18 months now. Are you moving the needle on that? Is it, you know, are we actually seeing that number of people who, for maybe the first time ever, are becoming aware of their status and then able to respond to that?
Yeah, so because of the nature of the test kits, these are intended to be private, confidential, take them home, do them on your own, do them in the privacy of wherever. We don't actually know the results of people's tests, right? We have to rely on our evaluation data. But what we do know is when people take the test kits, they give us a bit of data about themselves. So we know that we're hitting target populations, folks that are impacted by HIV, Indigenous folks, queer folks, African, Black, Caribbean folks. Like, these populations are more impacted by HIV, and we know that they were accessing the test kits. We know that almost half of them were first-time testers. And so these are really good indicators of where we want to go and what we were hoping to achieve with these test kits. But listen, the test kits, I want to be clear, this is not how we're going to end HIV. It wasn't just with self-testing, right? We need to then identify, we need to then link them to care, and we need to treat people. And we've got all of those tools. And what we were doing is we were taking this testing money and kind of stretching it, right? We were hiring outreach workers and things to be able to do the testing. But what those boots on the ground were actually doing is the work that the community sector does, which it connects people to the services they need.
I mean, it makes me think, you know, let's say you're in rural Ontario, you're in Haliburton County, and you're listening to this and you're thinking, wow, I'd love to, you know, had some what we like to refer to as adult fun times. And, you know, maybe because knowing is important. On the show in the past, we've talked about the impacts of not knowing could have on your health. We've talked about the legal cases that come from not knowing. You know, ignorance is not an excuse in the law. Like I said, circling it back to that health piece, it's so important to be aware. So let's say I'm in Haliburton and I want to think maybe this is the time that I should reach out and get a test. You know, I could talk to my family doctor, who you've probably known for several generations, probably the same family doctor that treated your mother and, you know,
your auntie. Yeah.
So maybe, you know, that's not as comfortable an environment. I can understand the hesitations that folks will have. You talked about stretching that funding and putting some of that infrastructure in place, and that, you know, you refer to it as a bit of a runway. And I want to build on that a little bit for our audience. It's not just, you know, people signing up saying, I'm in Haliburton, please send me a test. I imagine you've had to, and all the other agencies have had to staff up to be able to accommodate this. You touched a little bit on the outreach and the training and education. You know, I assume you may have some folks reaching out to you, figuring out, you know, I've done the test, what happens next, you know, with that information being in either direction. You know, are you concerned that when these test kits and the funding runs out, that you're going to have to downsize back again, you know, when this funding becomes no longer available?
So a couple of things there, Luke. One, if you're in Haliburton and you want a self-test kit, you go to selftest.katie, which is CATIE.ca, and we'll ship you one free of charge to your house in very discreet packaging. So that's how you can get your test kit done. And I encourage you to do that, because we have really great treatments to both prevent and treat HIV. So if you are at risk and, you know, you test negative, there's an opportunity then to go in and talk to a clinician about maybe getting on PrEP or something like that. And, you know, for our audience, PrEP is pre-exposure prophylaxis. It's essentially an HIV drug that prevents HIV if it's taken regularly, or you know how it's supposed to be taken. And then